Hey, and welcome into the Big Ten Huddle. I'm your host, JR. I've got a lot to talk about going on in the Big Ten. It is the recap episode of Week 11. We only had six games, but boy, did we have some stuff happen. We had Indiana get ranked fifth in the AP poll. Is that an indication of the college football playoff poll and the rankings and where they'll be? We'll talk about that toward the end of the episode. We're going to talk about the huge upset UCLA had over Iowa. We're going to talk about Rutgers coming back from the dead. They looked like they were gone. They looked like they were dead, but they came back and they got the win over Minnesota. And then the usual, Ohio State kills Purdue. Oregon just stomps on Maryland, and Penn State asserted their dominance after the loss last week. I got Jeffrey the Greek here to talk with me about it all. Zach's on vacation, so we got Jeffrey here. Jeffrey, how you doing this weekend?
Doing good. Would be doing even better if Friday night went a little bit different, but hey, that's how it goes in the Big Ten this year.
Yeah, if you listen to the Eyes on Big, where Jeffrey does his podcasting with Jordan over there, then you know that Jeffrey, a huge Iowa fan, and you played for Iowa, correct?
Correct, I did.
Yes. That's what I thought. And so, huge Iowa fan, played for Iowa. So I'm interested to get some of your expert Iowa insight tonight on kind of what went down there, your thoughts. The fans are kind of out of control, but you know that's fandom in the basically college football. So we're here.
Yes,
for it.
Yes, it is chirp and fanatic.
Yes, for sure. But I wanted to start just by kind of talking about the week overall and talk about what we learned, because I feel like we're at the part now where we can kind of make conclusions about this conference. And it's really interesting with the new teams coming into the conference. This is no longer the two divisions, Big Ten West, Big Ten East, where we kind of felt like we knew this conference very well. Not only is this conference kind of becoming its own thing, but we are discovering what it is at the same time the players and the coaches are, and it's really beneficial for us to have those discussions here at the end of the season. So Jeffrey, I'll let you start off first, maybe in week 11, or if you want to even go back a little bit, like what is something you've learned about this conference, whether it's the identity, something about the teams coming in, what is something you've learned about this conference?
To answer the question honestly, I don't feel like I've learned a damn thing. I feel like it's been the top four teams whole year, and teams 5 through 17 is an absolute mystery to me. So not to break my arm, pat myself on the back, but my picks, you know, we do against the spread, over under every single weekend. 2021, good. 2022, excellent. All right. You could go document and find it. Last year, also very good. I am awful this year. I can't hit water falling out of a boat when it comes to picking these teams. It's like they change personalities every 2 to 3 weeks. I can't get a finger on anything. Again, talking teams 5 through 17. The top four teams have been great all year. The bottom team, Purdue, has been bad the whole year. In between, can't figure it out. The one thing I would say is that I feel like I know that the top four teams are going to the college football playoffs. Maybe there was a little bit of question with that, with Indiana and Penn State, but Penn State said, we're going to show people that we're pretty darn good. And I think Indiana, in that, even with it being a close win, I think they'll get a lot of respect for that too. I would be shocked if all four of those teams didn't make the playoffs.
Me too. I've said it for a while now. The only way Indiana doesn't make the playoffs is if they lose by like 50 points to Ohio State. And even then, I still think they have a good shot. It would just kind of depend on what would happen around them. But with Georgia losing, I don't think Ole Miss is going to finish the season, you know, unscathed here. So with the SEC having as much parity as it has and things going awry for some of these teams like Alabama, Georgia, teams like that you thought were shoo-ins to win the conference or to be right up there at the top, It's at the point now where the conference battle, conference race, whatever you want to call it, is getting even more thin. In fact, Philip brings it up right here, our buddy Philip. He says, I've learned the Big Ten is better than the SEC.
Fair.
I think they're very close. But what do you think, Jeffrey?
What I think is, it sure is interesting that the last 6-7 years, previous to Michigan winning it all last year, it was always about the top two teams in the country, which typically were in the SEC, right? Everybody else was compared against those top few teams in the SEC, because that's what the SEC does. They produce the top elite level teams that go win championships, and that's all that matters. Well, guess what? That's what Michigan did last year. Right now, almost without a doubt, the top team and probably two or three of the top four or five teams in the country are in the Big Ten. So if that's what we've been using as the litmus test for all of these years, it shouldn't change last year and this year. Those teams are in the Big Ten. Funny how now we're starting to hear the depth conversations with right. the SEC. There's just so many good teams, one through five, that it's impossible to get through it. Or maybe these teams at the top of the SEC just aren't as good as some of the elite teams that we've seen last year. In my opinion, Georgia from what, 3 years ago, they'd still be undefeated in this SEC team. 2019 LSU, they'd still be undefeated, I believe, in this SEC. I just don't think there is a top-level elite team in that conference this year.
Yeah, and I think a big part of that is because the talent is being more evenly distributed, not just within the SEC, but also the country, right? You have teams being able to pay players, and I'm not going to do that whole thing of like the SEC was paying players and everybody can. I think there's a little bit of truth to it, but I'm not going to make excuses. I'm going to go ahead and say that like everybody now has a major incentive for, hey, don't go to school down in the South. Come to, you know, a northern school, whether it be Ohio State, Penn State, whatever it might be, Oregon. I mean, Oregon's killing it in recruiting right now. They are just going crazy. But go to one of these larger schools where, yes, you might be more away from home, but boy, we're going to pay you and we're going to make sure that you really have the incentive to come here and stick around. And that's one less guy to Georgia. That's one less guy to Alabama. And eventually, I mean, it's just like if you eat fast food every day, that eventually is going to add up. And you're going to be like, I got to put myself on a budget here, right?
Right. Yeah, all those things that you mentioned, I think are true, right? I mean, Kirby Smart has said it pretty much, like essentially the days of hoarding talent are over. It's going to start affecting our roster. You're seeing it this year with Georgia. I mean, we've never seen Georgia. I mean, up until this past weekend, Kirby Smart had lost to nobody other than Alabama, and then they get boat raced by Ole Miss. So, like, if you're looking for signs, they're piling up that there isn't a top team. And to go back to a point you had before with the end of the divisions with the Big Ten, first thing I would say is this probably is when we should have the divisions because it's so massive for the conference. That's probably almost its own podcast. But on top of that, I would say I really believe if the divisions were still the same, I still think you would see the top four teams being the top four teams in the Big Ten and teams 5 through 17 kind of looking the same. It's in my opinion, it's more about the quality of the team that shows up every Saturday as opposed to completely focusing on the schedule. The schedule matters, don't get me wrong, but not as much as just simply how good the team is. I simply believe that even if Indiana was still in the Big Ten East, Siggy would still have them cooking and looking darn good this year, okay? Like, maybe they'd have a loss in there because they would have already played Penn State by now, but Michigan ain't what Michigan used to be. So that division this year would essentially boil down to who? Indiana, Ohio State, and Penn State. So really the only thing that Indiana is missing this year is they haven't played Penn State.
Yeah, that leads me into really what my main thing I've learned in the Big Ten, and it's not just so much the Big Ten, it's actually almost nationally as well. I've learned that 2007, that's that legendary year of parody when like just everything went crazy, right? 2007 is going to be a whole lot more likely nowadays than it ever was before. You see a Kirk Cignetti come in and get Indiana to their first ever 10-0 record season in his very first year, and he brings in a bunch of G5 level guys to do it. He brings in Curtis Wark, the quarterback. He assembles himself a really good staff. Tino, I think I'm saying the last name right, Sinceri, the quarterback coach, who he's done a great job. Mike Shanahan has done a great job as the offensive coordinator. I mean, all of these guys coming in and just doing a great job. It's underrated how good of a job the defense has done for this team. D'Angelo Pons has been an absolute superstar. Got a quick fact about him later on in the show. One of the listeners shared with me, so we'll get to that a little bit later. But overall, like this 2007 that we once looked back upon as like, oh, this was the year of college football that was so much fun to watch. Honestly, it could happen every other year, every 2 or 3 years. Heck, it might happen every year at this point, because you see a team like Michigan, who had the first round picks coming back. Yes, they lost a coach, but they had the first round picks coming back. This should at least be a 9 or 10 win team. They're 5-5, Jeffrey. 5-5. Like, it's week 12, and the defending national champions don't even know if they're going to a bowl yet or not. It's absolutely crazy.
I put it, we're thinking along the same lines. I put a tweet out Saturday night that said, after Georgia had just got officially boat raced, I put a tweet out that said, we now feel better about the Indiana Hoosiers making the college football playoff than we do the Georgia Bulldogs. This college football season is crazy. Eat your heart out, 2007. Like, this is, I think we might already be there, you know, like if neither Alabama or Georgia, or even if just only one of the two makes the college football playoff, but the Hoosiers do, we're already in crazy world. And I just want to throw something out there too. I'm not so sure Boise State shouldn't get that fourth conference title winner, by over the Big 12 team, because I think the Big 12 is a big bag of, that's more of the stuff. And I would understand if Boise State got that number four spot. And I think Boise State has got a chance to beat whoever they play in the first round. You know, like this, again, this is where we're at.
Exactly. I'm right there with you. I think that Boise State has a really good shot of making it happen. BYU, if they win, I think they'll still be ranked above. But I put out a playoff prediction just last week where I looked at it and I said, Colorado has a very good chance of making the Big 12 championship. And with the talent they have at quarterback and the way they're developing, I mean, this is a team that is going to be very scary for anybody that plays them, BYU or anybody else as well. And I said, if Colorado beats BYU in the Big 12 championship game, you could be looking at a situation where it is the Ohio State or Oregon as the number one seed or whoever is the Big 10 champion. You could be looking at the ACC champion if Miami hadn't fallen this weekend. You could have saw them as the number two seed. You could have saw the SEC as the number three seed. And then you could have saw Boise State as the number four seed with the Big 12 Colorado as the 12 seed or 11 seed or whatever. Like, it's just everything we thought was going into the season all has to be questioned now, not just in the conference, but nationally, everything. And it's so much fun to watch.
And absolutely. But it takes a tick to embrace some of the chaos. Like, fans are going to have to start. They're going to need to recalibrate their expectations per year. These top level blue bloods, if they can no longer assume they're going to get through the regular season undefeated, you know, that's what the top teams did. They just don't get beat. They have to adjust and say, okay, we might have lost a game in whatever, the middle of October. We're not out of this thing. And it might not even make that big of a difference. And heck, maybe it's better to wind up with the 5 seed in the college football playoff,
right,
than almost any spot in the playoff for seeding to begin with. So, like, and we're all just kind of guessing at this stuff because we're not going to know. We'll get a taste of it once we finally get through the playoffs this year. But I think it's going to be something that it's going to have a different feel and flavor to it. Like, we're going to need 3, 4, 5 years until we can really get a feel for what this thing even looks like.
I agree. We're going to go through you guys' comments really fast because I think some of you guys brought up some good stuff about what you learned about the Big Ten. And then we'll move on to talking about Ohio State. Billy Tuesday, of course, Ohio State fan, says he learned Michigan has no offense. I think he probably could have learned that earlier in the year there, Billy.
I think we do. Yeah. Yep.
That's definitely something we learned this year. John Jacob says, IU fan here. A win is a win. Warren is the worst Michigan quarterback I have ever seen. This will be the very different with Howard from OSU. So a lot of Michigan talk there and what they learned that went on as well. Phillip's talking about the Big Ten more. Billy's talking about Iowa here. He says, I always liked Iowa, so now I root against them with Ferentz. Their ceiling is mid-level team in the new Big Ten. I don't know if I completely agree with that. I do think Ferentz brings a level of consistency to the team that I think if you're consistent and you don't beat yourself, your floor is kind of mid, I guess is my opinion. You might have better thoughts on that there, Jeffrey, because you played in a Kirk Ferentz system where, you know, consistency is the key. Do your job, right? I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
I think Billy's just using the same line that he sees all the time. And the fact of the matter is, the only team that beat every team in the Big Ten during the time of the East and West is Iowa. And it's been Kirk Ferentz that's done it. Yeah. Yes, they've won the division as much, or I think more than anybody. So, like, this whole thought process that the only way that you won games is because of a division you're in loses a lot of water when you look over the out-of-conference record, bowl record, which is also very good under Ferentz, record against the teams in the Big Ten East that were not at the top and who had the most wins against those teams. Some of them ranked in the top five and top 10. It was Iowa. It is more about, going back to the beginning of the podcast, it is more about the quality of the team that you put on the field as opposed to your schedule. Now, if you switched out Iowa for Indiana, okay, or Iowa for Michigan State, do I think Iowa would have a touch less wins and Michigan State would have a touch more? Sure, I believe. But to think that it would be a completely different thing, you know, like Iowa suddenly drops down and becomes a 500 or below 500 team simply because of the change in the schedule, it's preposterous, and it's somebody that's not actually paying attention to how these games went. This year, and when we break down, if we'll talk about the Iowa-UCLA game, this year has very little to do with Iowa's schedule. It has much more to do with the question marks within the personnel and what Iowa is up against this year internally as opposed to the schedule.
Yeah, I think the gameplay and the areas, we'll talk about it much more when we get to UCLA, right. Iowa, but I think that there's a whole lot more to talk about there other than, like, you know, they don't have a coach. I think there's a whole lot more going on. Real quick question for you here, Jeffrey, and then we'll move on to Ohio State. Who gets the credit for making Iowa tight end university? There are a lot of really good tight ends that come from Iowa.
Yeah. That's a great question. I don't know if there's, you know, one person that you can pin it down to. I mean, Iowa's tight end history goes all the way back to pre-Kirk Ferentz during the Hayden Fry days. They always made the tight end very important. You can go all the way back to Marv Cook, which, you know, got probably the tight end thing going as much as anybody. I would just say it is the understanding that getting top flight wide receivers into a place like Iowa is tough to do sometimes. So you use what you have the most abundancy that you feel like you can develop. And that's been the tight end. So I would just say it's been spread out over time. Making it a true focus as a part of the offense is a big part of it.
Yeah, the regionality aspect of it and bringing in the best players you possibly can and fit them into your offense and have them thrive in what they do. It's a huge part of it. So huge there. All right, let's talk about Ohio State, Purdue a little bit here. Jeffrey, obviously, quick thoughts on this one. Not a whole lot to break down in this game. Ohio State wins 45-0. Purdue is just not a good football team. Ohio State obviously is a good football team. They're ranked number 2 in the nation. What were your thoughts after watching this one?
Mostly happy that this stayed under 52.5. That's what I was most excited about with this. It pretty much went down how we thought. I did take Purdue in the points, thinking maybe they'll get 7 points on the board and Ohio State will just be a little bit sleepy, 41-7 type of deal. But other than a little bit of success early in the game running the ball with Purdue, that was it. Adjustments were made by Jim Knowles. Not many adjustments were ever needed by the offense. You could tell that they were kind of, you know, working the ground game. My biggest question, though, is did Ohio State take more hits to the offensive line? I said Ohio State offensive tackles belong on an endangered species list. I tweeted out on Saturday. So, like, that's the biggest thing from that game is are they okay along the O-line? And is it something that they can rely on going through this, what is now going to ramp up into their toughest part of their schedule?
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that Ohio State just needed to stay healthy in this one, and that was the most important thing. Stay healthy. Looked like the new left guard, Carson Hinsman for Ohio State, had a little bit of a issue there with a guy falling on his knee, but he tweeted out afterwards that he's really thankful for knee braces. So I guess the knee brace helped him keep his leg intact there. But overall, like I said, Purdue, bad team. Ohio State, a good team, and they did what they were supposed to do in this one. It was good to see a blocked punt from Ohio State. Not a lot of really good special team play for the Buckeyes in the Ryan Day era. So starting to see that happen was good for them, and hopefully they can build on that for special teams. Jeffrey, absolutely. Let's move on to Oregon, Maryland. Now, this one was a little interesting at the beginning. Oregon, only had 21, I think, at the half. Maryland, what was it, 13 or... 17. I can't remember. I can't read my box score down there at the bottom, but it was rather close. And Oregon had another muff punt in this one. They had a muff punt last week against Michigan. They had a muff punt this week. Of course, Oregon did jump on it, so that was good for them. But I think they're a little bit talking about Oregon here with the slow start. Obviously, number one team in the nation. You still win by 21 points. That's what you're supposed to do. But did you have any concerns about Oregon in this one with the slow start, Jeffrey?
Not really. Almost nailed this score. This is pretty much what I was expecting. I would actually give a little bit of credit to Maryland and Lox. Lox can scheme a passing game up. Like, if there's a little bit of opportunity to get the ball into, you know, if you got a leaky guy or two in man coverage or a spot in the zone that he knows is going to be there, he'll hit it. And Billy Edwards Jr. can hit those spots, and those wide receivers can get to those spots. Long story short is I would give a little bit more credit to Lox. I mean, I watched the game. It wasn't like I really felt anxious about with Oregon at any time. They really have been focused and steamrolling teams for the most part. I think it's okay if there's just a semi, if we can even call it that, a semi slip up like this at some point. It's to be expected.
I agree. I think that when you do look back upon it and what this Maryland team has done, they've kind of had this happen late in the season against top tier teams a few times, right? Michigan last year gave them a really good game. JJ McCarthy struggled in that one, but they still were able to pull it out. Ohio Great State point. Was it two or three years ago, Ohio State struggled. It was a 2-point conversion at the end of the game that Maryland didn't convert, and Ohio State pulled away with the win. And I think it was even a Travion Henderson run they needed at one point in one of those games.
Yeah,
it's all meshing together. But Maryland, they've done this in the past, so I agree. Definitely credit to Mike Locksley, but this is what an Oregon team is supposed to do. You get hit, somebody gives you a good fight, you still win by 21. So give
him credit. I mean, maybe they didn't cover, but they got pretty close to that 25-point spread, and that was a pretty big spread to be good at. But you bring up a great point with Maryland. Lox gets the guys up for these big games, so that shouldn't be glossed over.
Yeah, and you're right, too. I mean, he is still able to scheme things really well. Sometimes we do kind of, you know, jab at Mike Locksley and stuff like that a little bit, but at the end of the day, he is still really a really good scheme guy. He coached under Nick Saban, and Nick Saban's not going to put somebody on his staff that he doesn't think knows what he's doing. So obviously he's going to do that. All right, everybody, we are going to hit a commercial really fast, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about the Penn State-Washington game really fast, and then we'll get into Minnesota-Rutgers. Stick with us for here about 30 seconds. Have you ever wanted to watch all 22 film, that film the coaches watch? Well, now you can. Introducing the Coaches Film Room. Over at Minutes to Sports, former college coach Zach Smith breaks down film of the most relevant teams in college football with a bit of a Big Ten lead. It's not free, so you'll need to sign up for the Colonel tier, which is $25 a month, but I can attest to you that it is far more worth it than that. With about 4 to 8 games per week, this is worth so much more money, not to mention Zach's analysis making you a smarter football fan. Go check it out. The links are in the description, minutesofsports.com. You won't be sorry. Back here on the Big Ten Huddle, we do want to ask you to like and subscribe as well as watching. We always appreciate you watching, but if you can like and subscribe, that helps us out, helps other people find more content. And let's be honest, there's not enough Big Ten content out there. We got wonderful podcasts like Eyes on Big. We got the Big Ten Huddle. We got other ones. We need as much Big Ten content as we got, because right now the SEC has got a lot of content. We need to beat them in every single area. Mm-hmm. So let's get some big Big Ten content out there. Help us out.
Yep.
All right. Let's bring up this Washington-Penn State game here, Jeffrey. Penn State comes out and they just start annihilating Washington. Will Rogers struggles in the first half. Damon Williams comes in and replaces him. Even he comes in with his legs and what he's able to do. Kind of reminds me of Jalen Milroe a little bit with how fast he is. I don't think he has the ceiling that Jalen Milroe has, but you know, with how fast he is and what he can do with his legs, it kind of reminded me a little bit there. But overall, Penn State was really, really impressive to see them come off that loss against Ohio State last week and not miss a beat. They came out against Washington and they played pissed off. They played like a team that wanted to make a statement, and boy, did they. What were your thoughts, Jeffrey?
Surprised me a little bit. Knew it was a whiteout, obviously, but thought, kind of coming off of the Ohio State game, is this Penn State team going to be as focused as they need to play an opponent that maybe, doesn't get their blood boiling? So I was essentially predicting a somewhat comfortable Penn State win, but Washington and the points with Rodgers and those wide receivers just making enough plays on this Penn State defense to be annoying and stay in the game. Couldn't be farther from the truth. Penn State just manhandled them up front on both sides of the ball, running it right down their throat. I mean, I think James Franklin was trying to prove a point with those rushing numbers that they had in this game without even Nick Singleton. And then on the other side, the Penn State defense, when it wants to just, hey, let's meet at the quarterback type of deal, they get there. So big shout out to Penn State on this one. I still don't think Washington's a pretty good team, not nearly as good away from home. But for Penn State to do what they did to Washington, I felt that was a statement, as in we belong in that 12-team playoff, and they're going to make a run here in these last couple games to try to prove that.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because in the past, right, this happens to Penn State, and they no longer are in it for the college football playoffs because it's only four teams, and typically you have Michigan and both Ohio State doing better than Penn State. Now they have new life. Now James Franklin can preach to his guys, yeah, you dropped that one, but guess what? Don't let that affect you too much. You can still make the college football playoffs, and we've seen what happens with the NCAA tournament in basketball. I'm not predicting it's going to be the exact same thing, but we've seen what happened there with all the Cinderella stories, upsets, and all that stuff. Who knows? Maybe that'll happen a little bit in football. Obviously it's not, 16 seed versus 1 seed, but still, who knows? It could be crazy. Some things could happen, and Penn State could come out with a big victory and do something amazing. And right now, with them playing like this, I don't deny that that's a possibility for them. We were questioning last week, should Indiana be ranked above Penn State? Kind of had some of that thought process, and I still think that that's a conversation, but I think Penn State heard the whispers. I think they heard people talking like, oh, can we really believe in this Penn State team? And they responded well, white out, everything you said, came out and destroyed them. So props, major props to Penn State.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about Minnesota Rutgers. We'll stick on this one a little bit longer. This was a little bit more of an interesting game. Minnesota comes out. They were hot. They had a four-game winning streak. They had all the turnovers. They were doing so well, and it looked like things were going well for Minnesota to begin the game. They scored, and Darius Taylor had the 18-yard touchdown run. Was really concerned with no Kyle Manungai for Rutgers. I didn't know how that would go. That was my key to the game for how Rutgers would win, because Minnesota has struggled against elite running backs. But even without Kyle Manungai, Athan Kaliak-Manis said, Minnesota, you have a really good pass defense. Guess what? I'm going to throw it all over you. And he did in this one. They came out with a touchdown pass to Dymir Miller, and he scores two in this one. Ian Strong has one later on. And at the end of the day, just a huge boost for Rutgers and a demoralizing loss for Minnesota. What was your thoughts?
My thoughts were, apologies to Minnesota fans. Jordan and I both predicted the exact same score, which was almost reversed with Minnesota winning this, which this year is just a, you might as well get the coffin ready for that team, because it jinxes them so bad. I just really thought, okay, we knew Rutgers was coming off the idle week. And we knew that there was a chance that Rutgers was getting a little bit healthier, okay? But boy, had it gone south with Rutgers. And on the flip side, Minnesota so hot coming into this game. Quarterback comparison, obviously it's interesting with Ethan Kaliak-Manis most recently being for Minnesota. But Max Brosmer has just been so good this year. We make a joke on the podcast, he gets 8% better every single weekend, and he was still pretty good in this game. Like, a lot of signs pointed to Minnesota. All the signs pointed to Minnesota in this game through three quarters. I mean, this was a Minnesota win into the fourth quarter. This game changed on a dime with Rutgers turnover, touchdown, penalty. All of a sudden, the next thing you know, Rutgers takes the lead and doesn't look back. Shout out to Greg Schiano, right when you think that guy's dead, he will get his team back to believing and pull out a win. So that really should be probably the biggest thing here is shout out to that Rutgers team still believing in themselves.
Yeah, yeah. Philip talking about Galliak, man, stole the antidote of confidence from PJ Flex. We make that joke all the time. Got some Sprite in him. Good job, Athan Galliak Manis.
Yep.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. Like, Greg Schiano has been questioned so much ever since they started losing games. And we even heard some Rutgers fans saying they wanted Greg Schiano fired, which I was like, okay, I get this is like standard conversation, but you can't actually be serious. Greg Schiano is a very good coach. He's, in my mind, he's the best coach in Rutgers history. And I didn't know where they were going to go that was much better than Greg Schiano for them. And he has all these injuries. Like, you have to look at it and realize how many injuries there are, and that Rutgers is just not a team that has the depth of other teams in the conference. It's just reality of what the program is. And it's not bad. It just the reality of what it is. But I was really questioning why PJ Fleck decided to throw the ball so much in this one. From that first drive for Minnesota, we saw two run plays. Now, they did have some big pass plays. They had the 28-yard pass reception. The very first play was a 15-yard reception to Daniel Jackson. I understood that a little bit more, but you have Darius Taylor, who I know he's kind of been a little streaky this year, but only 10 carries for Darius Taylor, 45 passes for Max Brosmer. I really like Max Brosmer, don't get me wrong, but this Minnesota team has to have a balanced attack. It's not like you don't have a running back, right?
I definitely agree that Minnesota needs to be a balanced attack. I agree that they should have run the ball a little bit more. You know, I would like to know what Jay Harbaugh, the Minnesota offensive coordinator, was thinking. If I had to guess, I think he just did not see the capability of Minnesota running the ball suddenly in this game. Like, Rutgers has looked for it. And if you go back and look, a lot of the issues with Rutgers has been with that back seven throwing the ball on them. So I think all of those things kind of combined together. Then suddenly late in the game, they're behind. And they were running out of time, so they needed to throw the ball. So those numbers kind of snowballed at that point. But again, I would give it more to a shout out to Rutgers. They just were not letting Minnesota do much on the ground.
Yeah, no, I don't get me wrong. Definitely shout out to Rutgers and what they were able to do. I mean, really, really nice win for them. We talked about it earlier on in the season with, like, what is PJ Fleck going to do now that he has a passing game? Is he going to rely on it too much? Is he going to get away from the run game? And I felt like in this one, our guy Sky U-Pod are talking about the O-line was pretty beat up and it was pretty brutal for him. I get it. But still, like, you let those free rushers know that Max Brosmer is dropping back every single time. There's a much bigger difference when you have a question of, oh, are they going to run it or not? Even if they haven't been successful, then, oh, they're going to pass it every single time, and I can just speed rush past this guy. I can go inside. We can run stunts, whatever we want to do. And it makes it a whole lot easier on the pass rush. And that to me, was a really difficult part with what Rutgers was able to do with the pass rush as well.
But I think, you know, Sky U-Pod is on to something here. Like, I didn't want to trash the O-line too much, but that's what a lot of what it was. I had predicted, most people I think thought that this Minnesota offensive line would be really top level offensive line in the Big Ten. I don't pretend to understand what's happened, but it has not been. I would say Max Brosmer and the play calling has bailed out this offensive line quite a bit. It would look worse if, you know, go figure, the quarterback wasn't as good as Max Brosmer has been this year. I think if you asked play callers, if there are times when, for whatever reason, there is one or two game wreckers that just suddenly does not match up well to your O-line, and you very quickly realize it's just not there for you. This is not going to be your night to run the ball. There's only so many tricks in the bag that you can bring to the rushing attack. However, with a passing attack, all it takes is that quarterback shuffling his feet to find an open area in the pocket and finding an open guy. There's always somebody open, you know, that running around. That always gives you a chance, especially from a play caller's point of view, if they are having a ton of confidence with their quarterback, which I think Minnesota has with Brosmer.
Yeah, Sky Upod again chiming in. They say biggest mystery for the Gophers this year, returning four starters from last year, and it just hasn't worked. I remember thinking that in the offseason. You're returning four starters, Orisi, however you pronounce his name. I'm terrible with pronouncing names. I apologize. But he was coming in widely touted as a first-round draft pick possibility and stuff. And, yeah, it's just it's not been the O-line that Minnesota fans have been hoping for, and that's been difficult.
Ariadne Irsiri, the left tackle, he has been good. He has largely been great. It's mostly, you know, working your way from left guard over to the other side that's had more of the issues. But I would just add that into the bag of big mystery, the big bag of mystery. Maybe I just made something up right there, because that's pretty much what it's been. Again, teams 5 through 17, things that you thought you could rely on, you can't. It's just been weird.
Yeah, at this point, I saw your power rankings this week. It's like the 5 through 17, they are their own tier right now, because 17 yes. can beat 5 any day of the week, and it's just always moving.
It's the new Big West. Yep.
It is. All right, let's move on to Iowa, UCLA. I did a poll asking you all what game shocked you the most this weekend, and by many votes, 47 of you voted, 45% of you said Iowa and UCLA was the most shocking game. I wasn't too shocked, because I did see we were kind of talking before we came on here. I did see the short week, the lot of travel. I thought that this would be a close game. I did not think this was going to be a blowout in any instance or anything. I felt like UCLA has a very good run defense. They were going to be able to give Caleb Johnson fits. What I did not see was Brendan Sullivan just not being able to pass the ball hardly at all, other than down the field. And he did get a lot of yards, but he had, what, like 6 completions in this one? Right. He eventually does lead the game. He got hurt, so hope everything is okay there. But Stratton comes in, and Stratton, Jackson Stratton, he comes in. He's a walk-on fifth-string quarterback, I think.
Yep.
And I don't think he was terrible. I don't think he was bad. I think he did what he could. But at the end of the day, like, when you're on your fifth-string quarterback, it's really difficult there. Not taking anything away from UCLA. UCLA did a really good job.
No.
Not trying to take anything away from them. But for Iowa, that's a really, really tough position to be in this one.
I picked UCLA in the points. Had Iowa miraculously scored a touchdown at the end of the game, I would have pretty much nailed this score. But who's to expect Iowa's defense is what is most shocking about this. UCLA has not been able to run the ball in a wet paper bag this year. Iowa's rush defense, typically pretty good, if not very, very good, has not been there this year on the road. On the road, the front seven, it's like half of them didn't make the plane trip. I can't really figure it out. It's, in my mind, mostly around the D-line that has been underperforming on the road. And then we took a major hit that made the front seven struggle even more, which was All-American middle linebacker Jay Higgins went out of this game looking like a hamstring. So that didn't help things at all. It was a stunning game. And then you talked Sullivan. He did not look good from the get-go, but pretty early in this game, he took a big hit. You could tell that it took away what is his easily number one trait, which is his legs getting around the edge. You could tell when the play broke down, he was trying to get around like an outside rusher. Maybe sometimes it's a DB. He just could not outrun the angle because of him being hobbled, and that just took away not only his game, but pretty much the entire offense for Iowa. And then, I mean, we've talked about depth quite a bit on this interview here. Certainly by the time you get down to the fifth string quarterback at Iowa, we are really far down into the roster of expecting many great things to happen. I mean, he was just a scout team linebacker as a matter of days ago, and now he's taking snaps at a Big Ten conference in the middle of the Rose Bowl. It's amazing he did as good as he did. But going against this suddenly tough and active UCLA front seven, when you're rolling out that type of offense, good luck. I mean, it just was not going to work.
I do want to give credit to Eric Bieniemy. I tweeted about him after this game. I feel like we're seeing a bit of what an Eric Bieniemy offensive coordinator can be in this conference. What he was able to do in the run game, which hasn't been there all you know, all year. I haven't gone back and watched this game again yet. I plan to, because I do want to find out, was it more UCLA's scheme and the way they were blocking, or was it more of Iowa just not being very good in the run defense? And we've seen Iowa not do great in tackling at times this season. Michigan State comes to mind, but I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, that was really more of the secondary not able to tackle in that game. We've not really seen an Iowa defense be run on like this before, and it was just very perplexing to see. I know Phil Parker was probably out of his mind thinking, what in the world is going on? I mean, he's a smart guy. Obviously, he knows what's going on, but seeing his defense get run on like this, it was a very perplexing game. I knew that Iowa had some of the injury issues with the fifth string quarterback behind Brendan Sullivan. That stuff could be an issue. But even in that case, I thought an Iowa defense would be able to carry this team to the victory. But credit to UCLA. They took advantage of the opportunities and they made it happen. Do you have any insight there, Jeffrey? Did you feel like it was more Eric Bieniemy, or did you feel like it was more maybe poor rush defense by Iowa?
Got to say, it's all of the above. I felt like, you know, with Deshaun Foster, ex running back, I believe you always see the game of football through the eyes of a running back. That's still how I see it to this day. Most favorite position I ever played in football was running back. And I thought he did a really good job of teaching his running backs to understand that when the ball was handed off, to not nosedive into the mesh, give it a little bit of time and bounce it outside. They did that multiple times in this game. Iowa was not sound on the back edge, whether it was Castro or a defensive end, maybe every now and then outside linebacker, and they would squirt out. They weren't huge gashes, but 12-yard runs versus an Iowa defense like that is even surprising in and of itself. So I don't disagree with you that Michigan State was more of a back seven tackling deal, and this was more of a front seven getting off block scheme. So I would agree with you on that. Either way, if you are running on an Iowa defense, you know, you're doing something right, I think. So then that goes back to Deshaun Foster and Eric Bieniemy. I mean, all of these guys were new to this UCLA staff. Like, this was other than Deshaun Foster, but like in their roles and everything, it has took them some time. But then you also look at who they've played. I mean, they have played an absolutely murderer's row of football teams up to this point, right? So suddenly you wonder, well, if you just subbed out a couple of those teams, maybe they would have a better record, because this sure seems to be a UCLA team that's been playing hard for 3-4 weeks now.
I totally agree. This UCLA team, I heard reports early on in the year that it was a possibility that maybe they were starting to not practice as hard. Maybe they were starting to give up and stuff like that. And I couldn't believe it. I thought Deshaun Foster in his very first year, there's no way he lets this happen. He loves UCLA. He's an alumni. He played there, everything. Like, he's not going to let this happen. And all credit to him, the coaching staff, the players, that they got down early. They had a really rough start to the season. They almost lost to Hawaii to begin the year. It's a right. Really, really tough start to it. And now they're doing really, really well, hitting on all cylinders. It seems like the defense is putting it together, at least on the rush end. And then also the offense, like I said, Eric Bieniemy has found something. And Ethan Garbers is a really good quarterback, I think. And he's kind of underrated in some of the quarterback conversations we have in the Big Ten. So, all right. Yeah. Really good discussion there. Appreciate Jeffrey, you coming in for that discussion. I think that was some really good insight on Iowa. We're going to run another ad really fast, and then we'll come back, talk about Michigan and Indiana, and then we'll talk about the AP poll, college football playoffs, and then we'll be done from there. So stick with us, everybody. Michigan, Indiana coming up right after this. Home Field is your go-to destination for premium collegiate apparel with a passion for comfort and a flair for vintage design. Home Field brings you gear that is comfortable and stylish. With over 150 colleges to choose from, Home Field digs deep into the archives, uncovering forgotten logos, iconic mascots, and legendary moments to create one-of-a-kind apparel. Use my code TBTH for 15% off for new customers, or use my link in the description. Back here on the Big Ten Huddle, we do want to remind you there's also the podcast version. So if you don't catch it live and you don't want to mess with not having the screen on your pocket and everything like that with YouTube, always go over. You can find us on podcasts. We have all of our episodes posted there, long form episodes. We also have basketball also posted on that as well. Every Thursday night, we do a basketball episode, and we will fill you in on basketball as well. So go check it out. The Big Ten Huddle, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, all those different platforms. All right, Jeffrey, Michigan, Indiana. I thought Indiana would run away with this one. I thought Indiana, they might struggle at the beginning, you know, Michigan's gameplay, but the second half would be Indiana's. We've seen Michigan's defense kind of, you know, not do as well in the second half. Maybe the defensive line gets a little tired. The offense figures out Wink Martindale, that kind of stuff. And so when it was a little close, I wasn't too worried. I was like, okay, Indiana's going to come out here in the second half and really take care of things. Boy, was I wrong. Indiana's offense did virtually nothing in the second half until later into the fourth quarter. It was astounding what Michigan was able to do to Indiana's offense in the second half because of just the way the season has gone so far. I give a lot of credit, though, to Indiana. They were opportunistic. They had the really big return there at the end of the game. I had some people on the Power Ranking show say, like, oh, maybe you feel worse about Indiana after this one. I felt better about Indiana. I felt like this was a team where stuff didn't go their way. Things didn't happen the way they wanted to, and they were resilient. They were still confident in themselves. They never got down on themselves too much, and I think that this really just shows volumes of this team Indiana is. On the flip side, Michigan just doesn't have the coaches in my mind. Like, the coaches are making mistakes. Sherrone Moore, the timeout at the end of the game there, question some of Kirk Campbell's play calls. I don't normally do that because I think there's a lot more into it than maybe sometimes we understand, but there were just some decision-making I wasn't quite sure of. Jeffrey, start anywhere you want. What were your thoughts on this game?
Well, we share a brain in that I came away with this very impressed that Indiana now has yet another tool in their toolbox to win games, which is defense and special teams, because that's essentially what took them home. With special teams, it's like I had this thought go through my head in that when Michigan had the momentum in this game, right? They were a 2-point conversion away from tying this game, coming all the way down from 17-3, right? Being behind in this game. And Indiana then gets the ball back and gets, I think they had the punt return, and then they set up for the field goal. Now, you know, Indiana teams of old would miss that field goal, right? Leaving them open to be beaten by a field goal. That place kicker steps up. That, you know, that wasn't a chip shot, and he just pounds it right through. Suddenly like that, you're up by 5. Michigan's got to score a touchdown in order to win this game. That's championship DNA right there. You know, coming up with the plays that you have to come up with, special teams or whatever, because the offense was certainly out of sync. Whatever it takes to win a game like that. Michigan still got talent over there. They still got pride. They want to win this game. Very impressed that Indiana came away. Tons of talent on the defense that, you know, I was even doubting 4 or 5 weeks into the season. I thought that was going to be more of their Achilles heel. They have gotten better defensively as the year has gone on, because Rourke and those receivers were out of sync for most of the second half. So, yeah, I'm more love to Indiana more than anything.
I agree. I think, you know, if you're from the outside perspective, you know, maybe nationally or maybe from the SEC, you look at this and you're like, oh, Michigan's terrible this year and Indiana struggled against them. I can definitely see how if you didn't watch the game, maybe you gather that perspective. But if you've played football, if you understand the game of football, there is just an aspect of things don't go right sometimes and you have to figure out a way to win. I was confident in this Indiana defense after the Washington game because Taven Jackson had the start in that game. And that was a bit of an interesting game with what would happen. I was confident Taven Jackson would do a good job, but I did not think he was going to be Curtis Rourke by any means, right? And so what does Indiana do? D'Angelo Pons, very first drive of the game, gets the pick 6. They're up right away at the beginning, and you saw that defense not carry them, but kind of lead that team into the game and make sure Indiana knew they could lean on them. Same way here. Toward the end of the game, now Michigan doesn't have a great offense. I don't want to act like this is, you know, world beaters on offense here, but they do still have some skill players. They still have Colson Loveland. Like I said, I've said this before. I don't think Davis Warren is as bad of a quarterback as some people say. Do I think he's a good quarterback? No. I think he's an average quarterback, but I think at the end of the day, like, Indiana got really, really good pass rush on Davis Warren, which really made things difficult for him. So for me, like, You saw what you had to do to win the game when things weren't going right. You made it happen. Special teams, defense, all those different things like we talked about. Jeffrey, we've talked a good amount about Michigan. Where do they go from here this season? They might get Bryce Underwood, and that's great for them, but I still think there's a whole lot of questions to be answered about this team other than just the quarterback. That kind of is the overmasking thing that people get to. It's like, oh, you just need a quarterback. Still think there's a lot more to answer on this team. Did you Did you learn anything new about Michigan? Did you feel like there was anything that this game taught you about Michigan with where they go from here or anything like that?
No, not really. And my podcast partner, JW Eggleston 7, Jordan Eggleston, would be a better person to answer this since he's the Michigan guy and he's very plugged in. I will say he has extreme questions with the coaches, namely the offensive coaches. I will say there is this, I get a feel for them, and I know this as an Iowa fan, that they believe there is a way they want to move the ball, which is bludgeoning people up front with an offensive line and then running play action and things off of that. When you can't do it because your offensive line just doesn't have that gear this year, it causes concern when you have an offensive play caller that can't scheme up different ways to attack a defense running the ball. If you've got, like, this is what we do and we do it well, you better do it well. And if not, you're in trouble. And that's what we've seen. So the question becomes, moving forward, can they get back to doing what they want to do by bringing in the Jimmies and Joes, or do we need a different set of eyeballs to help with the X's and O's? Like, I don't know what the answer is. I just know that they can't roll out this offense again next year thinking that it's going to just work better because it's in year two. There's got to be adjustments that are made, probably both with personnel and the play calling.
Well, and to a certain extent, who you play as well. I heard there was, you know, Kalel Mullins didn't play very much in this game because he had a bad week of practice. I still think even with a bad week of practice, you got to rush Kalel Mullins more in this game. I think Donovan Edwards gets a little bit too much crap sometimes just because I do think that the holes aren't always there for him. It kind of happened last year a little bit, but he's shown how good of an athlete he is. And if you get him in open space, how dangerous he is. But I think Kalel Mullins is that guy who can really power his way through the offensive line and do more of what fits this Michigan offense. And they just didn't play him very much in this one. So I don't know if maybe there was an undisclosed injury there, something like that. Maybe it really was just they didn't think he practiced very well. I have no idea, but the way I look at it, there are too many questions with what has happened with coaching this year to just keep everything the same. I get if you want to keep Sherrone Moore, give him another year, stuff like that. I think Wink Martindale needs to be seriously questioned, though, and I think that Kirk Campbell honestly needs to go. And I'm not trying to be, you know, too rude to Kirk Campbell or anything like that. He was a good quarterback coach under J.J. McCarthy, so I feel like he's going to get a job somewhere else. But it's obvious that this offense that they've been doing this year, like you said, is not working, and it's probably not going to work next year as well.
It seems like it was too big of an advancement for him at this level, so I don't disagree with you there. That'll come back on to Sherrone Moore. He's, you know, a little green himself. So it's going to be a pretty interesting situation here towards the home stretch. I mean, you got to beat Northwestern to get the bowl eligibility. Like, I think you want to keep that streak going.
And Northwestern, so no slouch. We just talked about 17 can beat 5. Like, Northwestern, no slouch. Yep.
They're coming off an idle week, too. So, you know, watch out there. I would expect there would be some tweaks in the offseason.
Yeah, I would think so as well. All right, let's get to our last discussion here, Jeffrey. We have the AP Top 25 came out today. The college football playoff rankings will come out on Tuesday night. 4 Big Ten teams in the top 5. No other Big Ten teams even received a vote, though. Probably your teams that were the closest to that were Minnesota, Washington, and Iowa. They all lost this weekend, though, and I don't think anybody was going to be voting them in after losing when they were kind of on the fringe there. So no other Big Ten teams receiving votes, but 4 in the top 5. Do you think that this is going to kind of be what we see with the college football playoffs? Do you think we see IU jump Tennessee there like we did here? Do you think Penn State gets the confidence to go up to 4? Do you think Georgia goes down? I mean, just overall, what's your thoughts with the top 25? And do you think it projects at all to the college football playoff rankings?
Yeah, I don't think Ole Miss, Alabama get in front of them, 2 losses. I don't think Notre Dame gets in front of them, bad loss. I don't think BYU gets in front of them, almost lost. Probably should have lost if you watch that Utah game. So it really does come down to Tennessee. My gut feel is that they will put Tennessee in front of Indiana. And then I could see something goofy happen. Like, let's say Indiana challenges Ohio State but doesn't pull the game out, heck, I could see Indiana raising up in the poll, because that's how much weight the committee seems to put on the blue blood teams. So I would not be surprised either way if Indiana's 5, Tennessee is 6, or vice versa. But just trying to be clear, it wouldn't surprise me at all where they get a little bit, you know, feeling a little bit weird and saying, oh boy, only one SEC team in the top 5, we can't have that, and they sneak Tennessee in there.
So let me just get this straight. You are of the opinion that even if, and I'm not saying this is a foregone conclusion, we have a lot of Indiana fans that watch, so I'm just saying, if this does happen, if Indiana loses to Ohio State, let's say by a score or two, it's close, but right, you know, not like down to the wire, you still think Indiana makes the college football playoffs?
I think so. And I don't exactly know how this works, but I would think Tony Petitti is talking to somebody, and leaving out an 11-1 Big Ten team better not happen, especially when you are looking at all of these two loss teams that they're getting compared to, or a one loss team who really hasn't played any better of a schedule than what Indiana has. So yes, we think they're going to be somewhere around 5 or 6. So as long as they just don't get boat raced by Ohio State, I just don't see them dropping back far enough where it would kick them all the way out of the top 12.
Yeah, I can't see this Indiana team being boat raced by Ohio State. They're playing with too much confidence. They are too sound. They have too much good discipline. Kirk Cignetti just seems like too good of a coach. By the way, did you hear his answer when they said that it was the first time Indiana was ever 10-0?
No, what'd he say?
He said, not bad.
Siggy's got a lot of confidence with Siggy right now, and he deserves it. So I mean, first 10 win season of all time, they have got all kinds of things out in front of them still. So he deserves all the arrogance right now.
I gotta show you this picture. We clipped it last week and put it up, but this picture to me just kind of exemplifies Kirk Cignetti. Right. 40-10.
That's the standard. Hands on hips, looking like he's going to kill somebody. That's our boy, Siggy.
I love it. Yep. All right, so we talked a good amount about Indiana there. Penn State, Ohio State, Oregon. I mean, there's really not much more to talk about there. But do you have any thoughts about them and the AP poll and what we might look for in the college football playoff rankings or anything?
Oregon will obviously be number one. Ohio State will obviously be number two. I would say there's a little bit of fluidity with where they would put Penn State as well. I really think the biggest thing comes down to, where do you want to wind up? If somehow Indiana, doesn't beat Ohio State but has a good game, if Indiana winds up 6th, okay, is that possible that they are that high where they get to host a college football playoff game? Maybe they're perfectly fine with being 11-1. Maybe it's Ohio State that winds up in that. But I don't know, you know, like the whole point I'm trying to make is it's going to be interesting where it falls and where these teams are. And then in the seeding, you know, because again, I think those 5 and 6 seeds are going to be very coveted seeds, 5, 6, 7, 8. And then the other thing that I would say is when you talked about before with the college football playoffs and like comparing it to the NCAA tournament, I think there's going to be two factors that are going to be huge with the college football playoff. When does that team get hot? Do you get a team that gets hot at the end of the year? I think of Pittsburgh Steelers teams that have gone to win the Super Bowl, New York Giants teams that have gone to win the Super Bowl when they were never, you know, considered the number one team all year. And so a hot team and a key injury. The difference between a team playing hotter and then suddenly getting a team that just had a key injury to a quarterback, a difference-making wide receiver, could make a huge difference. Like all of a sudden, these 18 to 23-year-old bodies are playing a ton of football. We're going to see injuries, and it's going to have, I guarantee you, that will be a conversation that's going to be have more and more as these college football playoffs go on, is the amount of injuries that are going to be piling up.
For sure. Depth is going to be a huge thing. And for Indiana, them losing a couple guys, I think that their wide receiver, I think John was pointing it out in the chat, Miles Price, he was out in the second half of their game. I mean, you're going to lose guys at some point. It's about your depth and do you have guys that can come in and make a difference and, you know, still uphold the standard of what your team was able to do before. And I think that's huge.
Yep.
Totally agree.
Yep.
All right. I had one more thing I wanted to bring up, and I kind of teased it toward there at the beginning when we were talking about Jeffrey. So Jeremiah Smith, D'Angelo Pons. All right, D'Angelo Pons, the superstar cornerback for Indiana, what he's been able to do. Jeremiah Smith, the superstar freshman for Ohio State. Somebody pointed out on Twitter earlier today, they were actually teammates at Chaminade High School together for,
nice.
There for a while. Now, obviously not the same age, but they were teammates there for a while. So it's going to be kind of like two Florida boys coming back together here in the Big Ten, which I think is going to be really interesting. I do think, Jeremiah Smith obviously has the physicality advantage, the height and stuff like that. But D'Angelo Pons, there's been other guys who have the advantage on him. So he still made a difference in these games. So don't count out D'Angelo Pons. So Jeffrey, I'm just asking, do you have any thoughts about the, I know we're kind of looking ahead here. You have any thoughts about the matchup with D'Angelo Pons, Jeremiah Smith, and what we might see there a little bit?
I would just say overall, it will be interesting. Can Ohio State affect Rourke and his timing? I guess I'm not going the Pons, Jeremiah Smith route, but I that's what I'm more interested about is can they affect that timing as well as Ohio State did? And if that's the case, it's going to swing back into the favor of Ohio State because Ohio State obviously has a much better offense as compared to Michigan. So I don't think we have a line on that game yet, right, with it being another week out yet. So I will not be interested to see. I'll be interested. I would guess Ohio State by around 10 or something like that. So that's going to be interesting. As soon as those lines open up, I'm going to be looking at that one.
Well, Ohio State is favored by 10.5. I don't know how much you do this kind of stuff, but Ohio State is favored by 10.5 against Michigan, and Indiana was just favored at home by 14 against Michigan. So probably some math there involved, but yeah, probably somewhere around that 5-10 range, maybe.
For
Ohio State, Indiana.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would think the metrics would change a little bit seeing as it's Ohio State's at home.
Right. Right. But yeah.
Yep.
Yes. And it was John that pointed that out to me. Thank you, John. I wasn't sure if you were in the chat anymore. Chat's been going a little bit. So thank you for pointing that out to me, John. Appreciate you. John, loyal listener. We really appreciate John being
here. Awesome.
All right. And hey, if you listen to this podcast, you'll love Jeffrey's podcast as well. Eyes on Big. Jeffrey, why don't you tell people where they can find it at?
Pretty much anywhere you find pods, Apple, Spotify, whatnot. It's Eyes on Big B1G. I'm on Twitter. I pretty much tweet out the links to the podcast every time at Jeffrey the Greek, as you can see on the screen there. So yeah, we talk about started all 14 teams. Now we talk about all 18 teams. We pick against spread and over unders every single week. So we have a lot of fun. My podcast partner, Jordan Eggleston, and I, so check us out.
Very good. Yeah. Jeffrey and Jordan do a whole lot more kind of betting stuff than Zach and I do. We kind of do score prediction stuff. So definitely if you're a bettor and you kind of want some betting advice, go over there and see what Jeffrey and Jordan got going on. Like you said, they've had a really good time the past few years, maybe been a little off this year, but guess what?
Yeah.
Who hasn't?
Well, there's opportunity there. I faded us on the pod when we both picked Minnesota. I openly said, that's it. I've seen it enough. I faded us and it won because Rutgers won outright. So there's opportunity anywhere. It just depends on how you look at it.
Love it. Love it. All right, everybody. A little bit of an hour-long episode for you tonight. Zach will be back next week. I will have Justin Adams with me on Tuesday night. He is a Nebraska fan, so it's going to be really interesting to get his perspective on the Nebraska-USC game with Lincoln Riley going to be starting Jaden Maiava, I think is how I pronounce his name, instead. Mm-hmm. What are they going to be looking for there? Dana Holgorsen has come in to Nebraska, the conversation about everything going on there. So check back here, 9 o'clock Tuesday night. We'll be talking about all that stuff. Even you Indiana fans, I know it's a bye week, but even you Indiana fans, get here. Get here for the preview. That way you can learn a little bit more and be ready in 2 weeks when you have the biggest game of the season against Ohio State. It's going to be awesome.
Yep.
All right, everybody. Appreciate you being here. Appreciate you listening. Like and subscribe. Have a good one.